You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler.
Volume 2. The National Socialist Movement. The mission of the National Socialist Movement is to give our people the political insight needed, so they do not see their future aim in the romantic image of a new campaign by Alexander the Great, but they see their future working busily at the German plough for which the sword will provide the soil. It goes without saying that the Jew has proclaimed his violent opposition to the Eastern expansion policy. He can feel more than anyone else how these actions will impact his future. The fact alone that he opposes the plan should convince all truly nationally minded men that this new direction is the correct path. Unfortunately, the exact opposite is the case. German national and race-conscious circles have declared a hostile war against the very idea of an Eastern expansion policy. And, as always happens, the people listen to the one who has the most famous name. In order to justify a different policy, which is just as absurd as it is impossible, and very harmful to the German nation, the spirit of Bismarck is summoned. They claim that Bismarck, during his time, had always stressed the importance of maintaining a good relationship with Russia. That is correct for the most part, yet they completely forget to mention that he also stressed the importance of a good relationship with Italy. The same Mr. von Bismarck even made an alliance with Italy so he could settle matters with Austria. Why do they not continue to promote the Italian policy too? They will say, because today's Italy is not the same as Italy from those days. All right then, honourable sirs, permit me to raise the objection that the Russia of today is also not the Russia of those days. Bismarck never intended to create a political course that would become a permanent strategy. He was the master of the moment and would not want to tie himself down like that. The question should not be, what did Bismarck do in his days? But we should ask, what would he do today? This question is much easier to answer. His political wisdom would never have permitted him to unite with any state that is doomed to destruction. Also, Bismarck regarded the German colonial and trade policy with mixed feelings, since his main focus was on uniting and internally strengthening the state he had created. That was the only reason he welcomed the Russian support, so he could have a free hand for his work in the West. However, what was useful to Germany then would be harmful to her today. As early as 1920-1921, the young National Socialist movement was slowly brought into the forefront on the political horizon, and was, to some degree, considered as a German movement for independence. Our party was approached by various sides who attempted to establish a relationship between their people and the independence movements of other countries. This was actually quite similar to the widely advocated League of Oppressed Nations proposed at the time, which mainly consisted of representatives from certain Balkan states and those of Egypt and India. To me, they all seemed like pompous windbags without any actual experience. There were many Germans, especially among the nationalists, who allowed themselves to be dazzled by these proud Orientals. They immediately believed any worthless student was a representative of India or Egypt. These fools failed to realize that not only did most of these representatives have no support, but they had not been authorized by anyone to decide on any kind of treaty with anyone. Therefore, the practical result of all relations with these people was zero. I have always resisted these kind of pointless dealings. I not only had better things to do with my time than to waste weeks on such fruitless discussions, but even if these representatives had been authorized by their respective nations, I would have considered the whole thing to be pointless or even harmful. It was bad enough during peace times that the German alliance policy lacked any aggressive intentions and ended up as nothing more than a defensive society of old states, long since retired from world history. The alliances made with Austria and Turkey were not at all satisfactory. While the greatest military and industrial states of the earth united in an active aggressive league, the rest gathered together a few old, weak states and tried to confront an active world coalition with this trash that was doomed to destruction from the start. Germany was bitterly repaid for this foreign policy error. However, this repayment was apparently not bitter enough, because it did not prevent those eternal visionaries among us from immediately committing the same error again. Their attempt to disarm the almighty victors of the First World War with a league of oppressed nations was absurd and ultimately became disastrous. It is disastrous because it constantly distracts our nation from what we could do. Instead of accomplishing something fantastic, the nation yields to unproductive hopes and illusions. The Germany of today is like the drowning person who grasps at every straw. They may otherwise be very intelligent, but just as soon as a ray of hope can be seen, no matter how elusive, these people immediately run to catch the ghost. No matter whether it is a league of oppressed nations, a real League of Nations, or any other kind of fantastic invention, it will nevertheless find many thousands of souls who are willing to believe. I still remember the childish and incomprehensible hopes that suddenly arose in 1920-1921 in nationalistic circles that England was supposed to be on the verge of collapse in India. Some Asian imposters, for all I care, perhaps even real fighters for the independence of India, who were loitering about in Europe at the time, had successfully filled the heads of otherwise sensible people with the mistaken idea that the British World Empire was about to collapse in the very part of India where she had her central cardinal position. Of course, it never occurred to them that their own desire had fathered all of their ideas. Nor did they see the paradox of their own hopes. How could they expect that the collapse of English rule in India would somehow lead to the end of the British World Empire and British power? They admitted that India was of the greatest importance to England. So if the empire was not ended then, why would she abandon India so easily? The native German prophet may consider this vital question as the deepest secret known to man. But it is presumably known by those who guide the history of England. It is childish to assume that England does not realize the value of the Indian Empire to the British World Union. It is another negative indicator of our absolute refusal to learn a lesson from the First World War when we blindly misunderstand the strong Anglo-Saxon determination and we let ourselves think that England would let India go without doing everything possible to prevent it. Furthermore, it is proof that Germans do not understand the methods used by the British in their penetration and administration of the Indian Empire. England will only lose India if she falls prey to racial breakdown through her own administrative machine, something that is unlikely in India at this time, or if she is conquered by the sword of a powerful enemy. Indian rebels will certainly never successfully conquer her. We Germans know from experience how difficult it is to conquer England. Apart from this, I, as a member of the Germanic race, would prefer to see India under English rule than under the control of any other nation. The hopes for a mythical uprising in Egypt are just as miserable. The promise of a holy war gives a strange yet pleasant sensation to our German sheep's head players when they think others are now willing to shed their blood for us. Cowardly speculation has always been the silent father of these hopes. In reality, any such uprising would come to a hellish end under the concentrated fire of English machine guns and the barrage of explosive bombs. It is impossible to successfully attack a powerful state that is firmly determined to risk its last drop of blood for the sake of its existence, and especially foolish to launch such an attack with a coalition of cripples. As a nationalist who knows how to evaluate humanity based on its racial foundations, I cannot link the fate of my own nation with that of the so-called oppressed nations, which I can see are racially inferior. We must take the very same position today in regard to Russia. At the present time, Russia has been stripped of its Germanic ruling layer and therefore cannot be an ally in the struggle for an independent German nation. From a purely military standpoint, the situation would be disastrous if Germany and Russia should find themselves in a war against Western Europe, which would likely mean a war against the rest of the world. The fighting would not take place on Russian soil but in German territory, and Germany would not be able to receive any effective support from Russia. The military might of the present German Reich is so disgraceful and so inadequate that we could not even protect our borders against Western Europe, including England. Even the German industrial territory would be exposed to the direct fire from our enemies, and we would have no way to defend it. Another problem is that between Germany and Russia lies the Polish state, which is entirely in French hands. In the event of a war with Germany and Russia, both fighting against Western Europe, Russia would first have to flatten Poland in order to bring the first soldier to the German front lines. In reality, it is not so much a question of soldiers as a question of technical armaments. In this respect, the conditions of the First World War would be repeated, except it would be even more terrible. German industry had to supply our notorious allies, so Germany had to bear the burden of producing the technical armaments all by herself during the First World War. If we faced combat together, Russia would likewise be useless when it came to the technical equipment of war. There would be no way we could oppose the general motorization of the world, and the ability to mobilize with vehicles would be an overwhelmingly decisive factor in the next war. Germany has remained disgracefully far behind, even in this important field, and then she would have to also support Russia out of what little she has. Even today, Russia does not own a single factory in which an automobile that actually runs can be manufactured. Combat under these conditions would be nothing but a massacre. The youth of Germany would bleed many times more than they did before, because the burden of the actual fighting would lie only on us, as it always does, and the result would be unavoidable defeat. Even if a miracle should happen, and combat under these circumstances did not end with the utter destruction of Germany, the final result would still mean we had been bled white. Afterwards, Germany would be the same as she was before, and we would remain surrounded by large military states. There would have been absolutely no change in conditions at all. The objection that a Russian alliance does not necessarily mean there will be a war is, in itself, an empty claim. And to claim that the purpose of such an alliance is simply to be prepared in the event of war is equally useless. No, an alliance that is not ultimately about war is foolish and worthless. Alliances are made for the purpose of battle. Even though the friction is not apparent when the alliance is formed, war is the fundamental motivation and the expected result. Never think that other powers will view such an alliance differently. Either a German-Russian alliance would take place only on paper, in which case it would serve no purpose and would have no value for us, or the words of the treaty would become a visible threat, which would warn the rest of the world. It is utterly naive to think that England and France would react by waiting a decade until the German-Russian alliance had enough time to complete its technical preparations for war. No, the storm would break out over Germany with lightning speed. Therefore, the formation of a new alliance with Russia would lead in the direction of a new war, and the result would be the end of Germany. Additionally, we must also consider the following. 1. The present rulers of Russia have no intention of entering into a genuine alliance or of honouring it if they did. We must not forget that the rulers of present-day Russia are blood-stained common criminals. We are dealing with the scum of humanity who used the conditions of a tragic hour to overrun a large state, kill and root out millions of leading intellectuals in a wild thirst for blood. And now, for almost 10 years, they have exercised the cruelest tyranny of all times. We must also not forget that these rulers belong to a people who possess the rare combination of inhuman cruelty and an incomprehensible skill of deception. Today, these people, more than ever before, feel called upon to impose their bloody suppression on the whole world. We must not forget that the international Jew who completely dominates Russia today does not see Germany as an ally, but as a state destined for a similar fate. You do not form an alliance with a partner whose only interest is your destruction. Above all, one does not form an alliance with creatures to whom no contract is sacred. They do not live on this world as representatives of honor and truth, but as representatives of deceit, pilfering, and robbery. A man who believes he can enter into a contract with parasites is no different from a tree trying to make a favorable agreement with mistletoe. 2. The danger that Russia was once subjected to is constantly hanging over Germany. Only a privileged class fool could dream that Bolshevism has been banished. In his shallow thinking, he does not realize that this is an act of instinct. It is the Jewish nation striving for world domination, a phenomenon that is as natural as the Anglo-Saxon's urge to dominate the world. Just as the Anglo-Saxon pursues this course in his own way and fights his battle with his own weapons, so too the Jew fights with the weapons he knows best. His way is sneaking into nations and undermining their inner structure. He fights with his weapons of lies and slander, poison and decay, intensifying the battle until he has achieved the bloody extermination of his hated opponent. Russian Bolshevism represents the Jews' 20th century attempt to gain world domination, just as they tried by different, though closely related means throughout history. His desire is too deeply rooted in his nature for him to change. No nation would voluntarily stop following their natural impulse to expand its own kind or to enhance their power. They are forced to do so by outside circumstances, or it is the result of old age as they become a victim of weakness. In the same way, the Jew will not voluntarily relinquish his road to world dictatorship by simply suppressing his eternal urge. He can only be thrown off his course of world domination by outside powers or when his efforts expire with his own death. The weakness of the nations and their demise through senility is caused by their surrender of racial blood purity. The Jew guards his racial purity more than any other nation of the world. So he continues in his disastrous way until another power confronts him and, in a huge struggle, throws this attacker of heaven back again to Lucifer. Today, Germany is the next great objective of Bolshevism. We will need all the strength of a young missionary idea to again rescue our nation from the entanglement of the international serpent and to stop the contamination of our blood. Only then will we be able to protect our nation and prevent the last catastrophe from ever again being repeated. If we pursue this goal, then it would be madness to unite with a power that is ruled by the very enemy who means death to our own future. How can we free our nation from the slavery of this poisonous embrace if we willingly walk into it? How can the German worker come to understand that Bolshevism is a damnable crime against humanity when we choose as our allies the very organizations of this evil plan and acknowledge it as an equal? How can we condemn a member of the broad masses for his sympathy towards a world philosophy when the leaders of the state choose the representatives of that world concept as an ally? the struggle against the Jewish effort to convert the world to Bolshevism requires that we clarify our attitude towards Russia. After all, we cannot drive out Satan by using Beelzebub. If race-aware circles today are enthusiastic over the idea of an alliance with Russia, they need only to look around Germany to realize whose support they have. Or do the recent racialists think anything that is recommended by the Marxist international Jewish press is going to be beneficial to the German nation? Since when do racialists go to battle with a weapon offered by the Jew? Has the Jew become our shield bearer? There is one main criticism that can be made against the old German Reich concerning its policy of alliances. It ruined its relations with everyone because it constantly swayed back and forth in an unsound and weak effort to preserve world peace at all costs. There is also one thing it could not be criticized for. It did not maintain a good relationship with Russia. I admit that even before the First World War, I already believed it was a wiser course for Germany to renounce her foolish colonial policy, renounce her commercial and naval fleet, and ally herself with England against Russia. This would have taken Germany from a weak international policy to a definite European policy of continental territorial conquest. I have not forgotten the constant insolent threats that the former Pan-Slavic Russia dared to make against Germany. I have not forgotten the constant military practice drills that were only intended to provoke Germany. I cannot forget the public attitude in Russia, even before the war, that was filled with hateful attacks against our nation and Reich. And I can never forget how the great Russian press was always more favorable towards France than toward us. There could still have been a second path we might have taken before the war. We might have relied on Russia in order to direct our attack against England. Today, of course, conditions are different. Even if we had choked down all kinds of bad feelings and been able to side with Russia before the war, we can no longer do that today. Since the war, the hand of the world clock has moved on, and the hour has struck loudly, announcing to us the time when the fate of our nation must be decided in one way or another. The large nations of the world are joining together, and this is our last warning signal to put a stop to all the nonsense, to bring our people back out of the dream world and into harsh reality. We need to point the way into a future that will lead the old Reich to blossom into a new era of prosperity. In pursuing this huge and important task, the National Socialist Movement must free itself on all illusions and allow reason to be its sole leader. Ultimately, the catastrophe of 1918 may prove to be an infinite blessing for the future of our people. Out of this wreckage, our nation can change the direction of its foreign policy and stabilize its position in the world, once it has been strengthened by its new world concept at home. Then it can finally adopt a political testament, like England possesses, and that even Russia once possessed, and like the one that enabled France over and over again to make correct decisions that benefited her. The political testament of the German nation concerning its foreign policy shall and must always contain these following ideas. We must never allow two continental powers to form in Europe. We must consider every attempt to organize a second military power on the German borders as an attack against Germany, even if it is just the formation of a state which could potentially be a strong military power. We must consider it our right and our duty to prevent such a state in every way possible, even if it means using arms to prevent the formation of this kind of state or to break its back if it is already in existence. We must be certain that the strength of our people is maintained by preserving the soil of the homeland in Europe and not in colonies. We must never consider the Reich to be truly secure until it can guarantee every individual descendant of our people his own piece of land for centuries to come. We must never forget that the holiest right on this earth is the right to the soil that one wishes to till oneself, and that the holiest sacrifice is the blood that one sheds for this soil. Before I end these deliberations, I must again point out the only possible alliances for us in Europe today. Previously regarding the problem of German alliances, I named England and Italy as the only two nations in Europe that we should strive to develop closer relations with, and those are the only nations that hold a promise of success. I will only briefly touch on the military importance of such an alliance here. The military consequence of such an alliance would be the opposite from an alliance with Russia. Most importantly, closer relations with England and Italy will not bring any danger of war. The only power that might be against the alliance, France, would not be in a position to go to war against such an alliance. Therefore, the alliance would give Germany a chance to quietly make all those preparations that would be necessary in order to settle the account with France. The true significance of such a coalition lies in the very fact that once it is finalized, not only would Germany no longer be exposed to the possibility of a hostile invasion, but with the enemy alliance itself broken, the previous peace treaty agreement is automatically dissolved, thus isolating the deadly enemy of our people, France. Even though this success would initially only have a psychological result rather than a physical result, it would be enough to give Germany today an unimaginable amount of freedom to act on its own. The new European Anglo-German-Italian alliance would be the one making the decisions, and it would decide what to do while France would no longer be in control. Suddenly, Germany would no longer be in such an unfortunate strategic position. This new order would give us a powerful protector on one border, and on the other border we would be completely guaranteed secure supply lines for our provisions and raw materials. What is even more important is that the new coalition would be made up of nations that in many respects would complement each other in their technical abilities. For the first time, Germany would have allies who were not leeches sucking on our economy, but instead they could and would greatly contribute to the technical build-up of our armament. There is another final fact that must not be overlooked. In both cases, we are dealing with allies who cannot be compared with Turkey or present Russia. The combination of the greatest world powers on earth and our young national state would create a different balance on European battlefields than we saw with the decaying national corpses that Germany was allied with in the last war. I have already pointed out the great difficulties we would face from those who attempted to prevent such a league. However, can anyone say it was easier to form the Entente? What the ingenuity of King Edward VII achieved, which in part was against the natural interests of certain people, the Jews, here we must and shall also achieve. When we realize these actions are necessary, it must inspire us to follow a wise, self-determined course. This will be possible the moment we become conscious of the impending need and choose one single, methodical road to follow instead of continuing along the aimless path our foreign policy followed in recent decades. The future goal of our foreign policy must not be to favor the East or the West, but rather an Eastern expansion policy that will acquire the necessary farmland for our German people. For this, we need the strength, but the deadly enemy of our people, France, is mercilessly choking us and robbing us of our power. Therefore, we must be willing to make every necessary sacrifice if it will result in the destruction of the French desire for dominance in Europe. Today, every national power that feels France's lust for domination on the continent is unbearable. Those nations are our natural allies. We must not consider any road that leads us to the strength we need as being too difficult, nor should we say that giving up any old alliances is unspeakable if the final result offers merely the possibility that we could overthrow the fierce hatred of our enemy. We will then leave the smaller scratches to quietly heal over time after we have cauterized and closed the biggest wound.
Thank you. tuned in to Radio Aryan.